bonus.
Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the super fans.
They are who we thought they were.
That's right. This is the Next Fan Up podcast, the podcast by the fans for the fans. And I am your Chiefs super fan. My name is Nick, and I'm here with a couple of the super fans to talk about some of the news that's broken out over the last few days. We've had some unfortunate injuries, some possible unfortunate QB news in terms of who's starting, who's healthy, and how those situations are shaking out across the league. And there's always plenty of other things to talk about. But most importantly, I am here with Rob, our Bills super fan and cocktail aficionado.
Well, you know, that sounds better than functioning alcoholic, so I'll take it.
Yeah, they're both sort of positive, at least for the functioning part. And we also have our Cardinals super fan, Dr. Jones. How are you, sir?
Wonderful. I wish people would refer to me as a functioning alcoholic.
Well, hey, I mean, if it's a step up, it's something to shoot for. All right. And as I mentioned, you know, we are the podcast by the fans for the fans. We have representatives from 30 of our 32 teams. And if you're just now listening to us and you are a fan of the Bucks or the Lions, we are definitely interested in hearing from you because those are the two slots we have open right now. Go ahead and send us an email at nextfanup@gmail.com. We'd love to bring in some guys from those two fan bases to represent, to chat about the things that they're happy about, unhappy about. Just send us a little email and tell us your sort of your fan story, why you're a fan, and we'll try to bring you in. There's a lot of other ways to find us, by the way. I mean, I'll get into more of those towards the end of the show, but either way, we're glad you're here, and it is time to start this thing off with some bad news for the Patriots, because I think just about everything. You know, it's like a good, pleasant way to start. I'm not rooting for anybody's injury, but if bad things have to happen to somebody, it should happen to the Patriots. In this case, it was the Patriots playing against the Detroit Lions, for whom we don't have a fan. First off, I mean, I watched this game because, you know, the Chiefs are playing them in the opener, and I was just surprised that the Patriots were playing their starters so long into this game. I mean, for one thing, it was an absolute bloodbath. I think it was 21-0 before they hit the 8-minute mark of the game. But Tom Brady, I think, finished out the quarter, and that was despite the fact that I think it was late in the first quarter, Edelman went down with a knee injury. It looked bad. He left the field. And despite that, they kept powering through, and they looked like they are definitely in midseason form. But the most important thing here really is just the fact that Edelman, it has come out. It is a torn ACL. He is gone for the year. And while they have a lot of other interesting receiving options, Edelman is really a unique piece in this Patriots offense. I mean, he is the straw that stirs the drink on for a lot of what they do. And so, Rob, I'm tossing it to you first because you guys, you see this team more than anybody else, practically. You know, what do you think about the Edelman injury and how much is this really going to affect the Pats this year?
So, as a Bills fan, I love anytime I get to hear New England Patriots and injury in the same sentence. Obviously, you don't really want to see someone get injured, but if it's a New England Patriot, I'm mildly less sad than I am for any of the other teams in the league. Unfortunately, my team is nowhere near good enough to take advantage of it. I think it'll affect their offense a little bit. Now, you'll see people say, you know, Chris Hogan can just plug in, and he'll do well, and he'll probably put up decent stats. But once it gets into, like, a big-game situation, obviously, there's no one contesting for the division, but when you're down into, you know, playoff time and, you know, playing a good team, you know, it's going to matter. I mean, he is, for all intents and purposes, you know, Tom Brady's security blanket. And you're taking that away from him. You know, someone who knows the offense, you know, he knows the offense as well as anybody, you know, having been in it for, you know, however many years. So I do think that, you know, maybe, you know, it's going to affect them kind of as the season goes on, maybe more and more. Chris Hogan will play well. He's probably the guy that fills in that spot. But I think that, you know, he'll do okay. But, it's not the same. He's not going to be an Edelman.
He had four receptions for 70 yards and two touchdowns in this game, Chris Hogan did. So, I mean, he certainly showed out there. Granted, again, they were pretty much moving the ball at will against the Lions, who, we can get to the Lions a little bit later. First, I'm going to toss it to you, Dr. Jones. What are your thoughts on Edelman, both from a fantasy perspective and what this might do to the balance of power?
Well, from a fantasy perspective, as it pertains to PPR leagues, this is a crushing blow. For standard fantasy leagues, I don't think it's as big of a blow because, you know, his depth of target is always so shallow. Now, one thing when I think about Edelman and the impact that he makes on the Patriot offense is, you know, they've got Hogan, they've got Cooks. These are guys that are going to be taking the tops off most of their defense. I think Hogan actually had very yards per reception was a very long number. So, you know, both of those guys take the top off the defense. And when I think about Gronkowski going down the seam, Edelman's the guy that provided the width. He was the one doing the out routes that got the linebackers to the hash mark so that Gronkowski had those clear seam routes. And when I think about that, I honestly don't think Hogan's going to be the guy getting a lot of that attention. I can see them putting often injured Danny Amendola into some of those slots. And when I think about Amendola, I think about the short area quickness, kind of similar to Edelman, but nowhere near the gritty, scrappy personality. So as a fan of NFL football, it's going to be really hard having Julian Edelman on the sidelines for the entire season. As a fan of the Arizona Cardinals and any other team going up against the Patriots as you head towards the Super Bowl, I think, you know, missing that piece is going to really hurt their chances. But, you know, Tom Brady's the ultimate equalizer, and Bill Belichick on the sideline is the ultimate equalizer. So as it pertains to what's going to happen this season, you know, it's going to hurt them when it comes to width and gaining width on the football field, which I think is a very underrated skill that he has. So it's going to hurt. And I honestly think this is why we hear about Landry trade rumors, you know, is because of they need someone to fill that role. And I don't know if they have anybody on their team that can capably do it.
Yeah, I mean, I think they might try to get their quick running backs involved in that kind of a game, you know, like with Deion Lewis and James White. I mean, they probably have the quickness to go into the slot and do some of those things. But there's just, I mean, you're not going to replace Edelman, I mean, entirely. I mean, I'm not sure there's another quarterback wide receiver combo in the league that has like the same just mastered timing of those two. But yeah, you made a bunch of great points there. And moving on to another unfortunate wide receiver injury, Cameron Meredith, who is expected to be one of the, you know, the really promising targets for this this very new quarterback group up in Chicago. He went down also with an ACL. I was chatting a little bit with Tom, our Bears super fan, earlier today. I mean, he wasn't as he didn't think it was going to be as impactful as I did, honestly. I mean, just because he sort of feels like they have a bunch of average guys at that position group, and there's one fewer average unproven guy. But honestly, I mean, just based on, you know, what he was able to do for them last year, I mean, he was one of the guys I thought, you know, had the biggest chance to step up with some better quarterback play. You know, whether it's from Glennon, you know, who had a good game today, Sunday, and or eventually with Trubisky. And again, I'm going to toss it back to you, Jones, as directly, because I know you, you know, you are have your fingers in a lot of fantasy pies. And I mean, this was a guy who is also an interesting dark horse in drafts, I think, this year.
Yeah, Cameron Meredith, he has a lot of upside, a lot of physical gifts that just they can't be taught. The problem with him is the quarterbacks that are throwing him the ball are either very underwhelming, like Mike Glennon, or very raw and young, like Mitch Trubisky. So when we talk about Cameron Meredith and what he would have provided from a fantasy perspective, it's going to be the 4 to 5 reception games, but those 5 receptions might equal 120 yards and 2 touchdowns for all we know. I think the bigger problem would have been if Kevin White went down. I think they're really hoping that Kevin White can be the guy that they've always drafted. They drafted him and hoped he could be, if he can, you know, get in the weight room and stop looking like a tight end, that is. But when it comes down to Cameron Meredith, another tough injury, very young kid. He should be able to come back from it. But, you know, this team's going to run a lot anyways. They're going to win in the trenches. Their offensive line is going to be what will win games for them. Jordan Howard, the rookie Tariq Cohen, who I really, really liked when they played the Cardinals in preseason. He really impressed me. But as long as they're winning in the trenches and they're getting a running game going, I think they're going to have the right kind of pieces, Kendall Wright, Kevin White, to back up and fill for the Cameron Meredith role. This team wasn't going to win 10 games anyways, but tough loss for a young player.
Any thoughts on Meredith, Rob, before we move on to the next injury?
Yeah. First thought is, you know, why me? Because he was one of my players in the Next Man Up Fantasy Football League. He was on the squad. I've already lost two guys for the year, and we're not even at the week one of the season, but my team's not that good anyway, so whatever. The thing that actually, I mean, in all seriousness, with him, it's kind of sad. I just like his story. He was he's a college quarterback and came into the league, converted into a wide receiver, and was really starting to come into his own. The way he played the second half of the year last year, with the same pretty bad quarterback play, Matt Barkley, Brian Hoyer for a little bit last year, not overwhelming quarterbacks by any stretch. And he played fantastic the second half of the year. So I was excited to see, what his progression was going to be. This will stunt it a little bit. But the good news for him, he can still keep his nose in the playbook, get healthy and come back strong for next year.
Yeah, and moving on to a guy that whose injury lost him for me on both my fantasy team and my real team, Spencer Ware was the other big injury this weekend. He went down early in the Chiefs game against the Seahawks, tore his PCL apparently, and also had some other damage there, which, I mean, for a while, the reports out of Kansas City were that they were hopeful that it might not be a season-ending injury, but it now looks like there's enough damage there that they are probably going to operate, which just means they expect him now to be gone for the season. It's definitely a loss, but I feel, and in some ways I feel similar to Chicago Tom in that the Chiefs didn't, although he was undoubtedly the Chiefs' best running back and the guy that they were going to have be the starter in terms of their stable, he was still going to be a stable this year. And in fact, one of the biggest talks in camp and that I'd been bringing up on these shows was, it was really become an interesting game in terms of a numbers game, is how they're going to keep all these running backs, if they were going to keep them all, and who they're going to have to cut. Because while there's a huge step down, and both C.J. Spiller, who's now healthy and back and looking good, and Charcandrick West both look like they're on very much an even footing in the same way as third down guys. And their third-round draft pick, Kareem Hunt, has also looked good. He looked good in our preseason game. Andy Reid has already come out and said basically Hunt is going to be the and that C.J. Spiller is making the team. And so that resolves, that whole controversy. But it still is going to be it's just going to be interesting to see how well that unit is going to hold up. I mean, I think, honestly, the entire reason they drafted Hunt to begin with was that they didn't expect Ware to be healthy all year. He was nicked up most of last year. I mean, he still played, but it was clear about halfway through the season he just didn't have the same burst. He was dealing with a bunch of injuries. And it's because he's such a violent running style. He's the interesting mix of being both a power back and also a great receiving threat, that he just, once he gets the ball in his hands, he will just truck basically any second-level defender or third-level. And because of that, I mean, he just took a ton of contact and actually, he hurt his knee basically catching a screen pass at the, for a 1 yard gain and fighting to make it a 9 yard gain. And in the mix of all of like the five guys he hit, that's where he tore up his knee in this preseason game. It's definitely unfortunate for him. It's not, I think, a huge blow to the Chiefs team. It is a blow to my fantasy team. I'm going to come back and talk to this game about this game a little bit too, because we're all going to kind of go around the horn once it's all over, just to air some grievances about our teams and talk about what we want to hype. I don't know. I feel like we have this conversation every year, but especially given the fact that, again, it was surprising how long the Patriots starters were out on the field and these things. I mean, What are your guys' philosophies when it comes to, starters and avoiding injury in the preseason? And I'll toss it to you, Rob, first.
I mean, I think it's for me, it's pretty simple. I like to keep it simple and just, you know, play them kind of the bare minimum. As far as, you know, training camp or preseason games go, I mean, they're playing, they're getting reps in training camp, you know, just keep them healthy for the season, for the start of the season.
And you, Doctor?
You know, it's pretty much the same thing Rob just said. I'll tell you, you know, you stretch before a game and you have preseason before the regular season. That's just the way it is. Now, I don't think you need to be playing your team a lot, but as a coach and a GM and a coaching staff, you have to do everything you can to prepare your players for the regular season, but also shield them from the possibility of injury. Now, as we all know, when you're playing in the season, injuries can happen at any time. The thing that drives me crazy about the preseason is it's a huge cash grab for the NFL. There are too many games. There's no reason to have four games, and in some cases, five games for some of these teams. I know there's a lot of guys trying to make rosters, but the actual reality is the NFL only needs two or three preseason games. That's my personal opinion. And having our players exposed to a preseason that's 25% of the length of a full regular season is a problem. So the coaches are doing it right. They're playing them sparingly. They're getting them in. They're getting them out. But these things are problems. Another problem I don't like is I think that preseason needs to be a little bit more regional. There's no reason the Arizona Cardinals need to be flying to Atlanta for a preseason game, Kansas City to Seattle. I think it's ridiculous. I think there should be some sort of structured joint practices the week before a preseason game, then a preseason game, and then you rotate. You know, Arizona can go to San Diego, then go to L.A., they can go to San Francisco, they can go to Oakland. I mean, these are all regionally located games, so you had very light travel. You'd be able to practice against another squad instead of always playing against yourself. And it should only happen two or three times in the preseason. That's my personal opinion.
I actually totally agree with you, and it actually brings up a couple of other things that I kind of wanted to, I wasn't sure if we wanted to touch upon, but let's just dive into it, because, I mean, this is, the preseason is just such this weird, annoying animal, where we want to treat them like real games, but not. I mean, like, no one is going into these things, like, believing that they are real in any actual fashion. I mean, they are basically scrimmages, but we still want to have fans paying full price. And we still want, you know, all the other things to, you know, to go into it. I mean, my biggest thing is, I mean, in this same game, in the Chiefs-Seahawks game, I mean, it was an absolute flag fest. And granted, preseason games generally are. But there were 27 penalties in this game. I mean, it was almost unwatchable. I mean, I'm looking at it now. I can't do the math in my head that quickly. But the Chiefs had 126 yards of penalties, and the Seahawks had 129. And, I mean, each side had, you know, 60-ish total plays. And so, I mean, they were committing a penalty on average, I mean, a little, like, once per five-point-something plays. I mean, it was just ridiculous. And look, I mean, I get the idea that, you know, I mean, like, I guess the refs are trying to, you know, I guess send some messages in preseason that they're going to be, you know, here and so that the players get it. But the fact is that about half of the players that are actually out there that are, you know, being flagged are not going to be on an NFL field this year. I mean, in fact, more than half. I mean, it's going to be half of them aren't going to be on an NFL roster this year. And so, I mean, I can see the argument that, like, oh, well, we want them to be used to the rules. But it's just silly. I mean, if they screw up, if they cause an obvious penalty, as long as it's not something that's endangering the health and safety of another player, I mean, that's something that they're going to get chewed out by their own coaches once they get back to the film room. There's no reason for us to treat these like normal games. Just make it a scrimmage. Like, allow them to play. It's like difficult enough to watch when it's, you know, when you have all the disorganization and the vanilla play calling and the base defense and all that kind of stuff that we have here. But on top of it, if like every other play is a penalty, I mean, it's just become extremely silly. So what do you think, Dr. Jones, about taking this one step further and just calling them scrimmages and you know, basically having them not be refs practically?
Well, see, there's two pieces to that. So one, there's the practical piece, which everything you said makes complete sense. And then there's the piece that the NFL is going to look at from the 30,000-foot view, and they're going to say, you can't monetize anything you just talked about. And literally, that's all they care about. So you've got a league that's calling these preseason games. They want four games. They want the stadiums, you know, as filled as they can possibly get them. And they want these ratings for these four games at these at CBS and Fox and ESPN, all the places that, that play these games. So you've got two forces that are completely opposed to each other, fighting against each other all the time. And that's what creates the collective bargaining agreement. So when I think about it, everything you said makes complete sense. There's absolutely no reason to have it happen. But the only reason it's happening is because it's filling someone's pocketbook. But I'm going to tell you right now, that shouldn't be what the essence of the NFL football game is, a cash grab. And that's kind of what the preseason has turned into. And it hurts me when I watch it happen. The Cardinals game, when it kicked off last night in the brand new Mercedes-Benz Arena in Atlanta, Georgia, this thing is a jewel of architecture that they built in downtown Atlanta. The first game ever in that stadium, 20,000, it was probably 30% to capacity, that stadium. And I think it's an embarrassment for the NFL, but they want people to buy pizzas and they want people to buy beer and they want people to buy tickets to the game on their NFL branded website. And really, when it comes down to it, until those kind of things change, which we all know they never will, it's going to continue to be the way it is. There's going to be a lockout in 3-4 years. I think the Players Association just said that again. We're leading towards a work stoppage, and this is one of the things they're going to talk about. The NFL might try to make the season longer by cutting preseason games, and that just exposes the players to more risk. So these opposing forces, they're always going to be there, and all we can do is complain about it. That's what I say.
Yeah, no, I think you're right on that. And I mean, the one thing I will say is that I don't remember what exactly all of the changes are, but one of the things that the NFL did talk about this year is just switching up the way that the commercial breaks work. They just realized that there's just like big gaps in the game where they always just like force in a commercial break and just like everyone walks away from their TV. And they know that because the advertisers are telling them that, and they're being forced to switch things up because obviously, I mean, I don't think there's any other sport in the world that gets as much stoppage due to advertising as American football does. And so, I mean, they're starting to adjust on those things, but only again when it's starting to hurt their pocketbook. When the advertisers are saying, like, look, our data shows that like no one's watching these ads we're spending a bunch of money on. When you put them in these places, maybe we need to like, you know, either move them to different areas or have there be fewer breaks or whatever, because this is a waste of our money, so we're not going to give it to you. That's when the league is going to actually move, is if people stop buying preseason tickets. Granted, unfortunately, season ticket holders don't have a choice, but, you know, that's about the only thing we can do. But we're all still here watching them and talking about them. Either way, we should move on to our whinging about the league and on to some of the other news here, which is, there were still a fair amount of competition going on within teams throughout this preseason, particularly at the quarterback position. At least those are the interesting battles. And the one that's gotten a lot of press, which as one of you guys, as we were talking off the air today, put it, has been basically a battle of attrition, and that is between Chad Henne and Blake Bortles for the starting position of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Chad Henne got the start, but it does look like the Bortles came away as the better guy here. And granted, that's not saying a ton. But either way, Rob, you're down in Florida land. I don't know what's your take on the Jacksonville quarterback situation and the inspiring victory of Blake Bortles.
Yeah, it's when you're starting Blake Bortles, it means the quarterback of your future is in college, because it's not him. they're going to. I'm very obviously very familiar with both the coach and the offensive coordinator in Jacksonville. Doug Marrone used to coach the Bills. And his OC, Hackett, was the offensive coordinator in Buffalo. I can tell you right now, they're going to run a very conservative offense. He made a comment saying he would run the ball every play if he could. And he really means it. He really would run the ball every play if he could. So you're going to see a lot of running the ball. Obviously, they invested a high draft pick in Leonard Fournette. But you're going to see the other guys get in there as well. But you will only – Blake Bortles will be the starter, but he will only be called upon when it's, when they are losing. And I did see an article recently that had about Blake Bortles, about how bad, for as bad as he is when the game is tied or a close score, he is essentially the Tom Brady of garbage time.
I saw that too. That was really pretty amazing stuff, that he is actually like the worst quarterback in the league when the game is within reach and the best when it is not. But moving on to another quarterback decision that we got, it's been a while since the Browns have actually had sort of a fascinating preseason in my mind. But I mean, honestly, this has been kind of an interesting one, just because you had all of these teams get quarterbacks, including my own this year. And you had three of them in the first round trading up to get them, in some cases giving up a fair amount for it. And, you know, the Browns, who have been basically the laughingstock of the, you know, of all the draft conversations over the last decade, they're the ones that actually stood pat, did not move up to get a quarterback. They get DeShone Kizer. And of the teams that picked up a quarterback high this year, I mean, they're the only ones that have already announced that their rookie quarterback is going to start. DeShone Kizer is going to be in there week one. And, you know, I guess as a corollary to that, already we have once again reports that they are looking to trade Osweiler. And so, Dr. Jones, you know, I mean, we had a lot of discussions about the relative merits of this quarterback class on the offseason, off the air. What do you think of Kizer? And you know, I guess, what do you think anyone's going to toss in order to pick up Osweiler?
Well, if they can get any sort of draft pick compensation for Osweiler at that salary, they've got to run to the phone, answer it, and say yes immediately, even if it's a seventh rounder, because I think his cash number is somewhere around $16 million. So that's a ton of money to be paying for someone as incapable as Brock Osweiler. The other funny thing I read, DeShone Kizer over the next 4 years is going to be making 1/4, I think, of what Osweiler is making this year. So that's pretty sad. But honestly, when it comes down to it, the Browns had to know this going in. I think the move they made to get him from Houston was an astute move. They picked up some picks. Really, all they're doing is what they've done in the NBA all the time, send the high-priced talent out of town, pick up some picks for taking on that contract. So I really respected the moves the Browns made there. And I'll tell you, this reeks to me of the Browns have a plan for the future. And I don't think any of us have been able to say that for a while. And DeShone Kizer has all of the physical abilities to be a top-level quarterback in the NFL. As long as he can get the playbook down, he can get his mind right, and he can, like, block out some of the noise that's going to be coming in, I think he's got a good chance to be successful. Now, I really like DeShone Kizer in college, but he has the ability to throw the ball over someone's head into the next county faster than anyone I've ever seen. So I call this Derek Anderson syndrome. He has the ability, I called him a scud missile. He would throw the ball, no one knew where it would end up. So he's got to work on his footwork. He's got to work on his accuracy if he wants to be successful, and he's got to get in the playbook. But the Browns have a plan for the first time in a long time. They've got some great receiving talent that they drafted last year, good quarterback this year. They've got Isaiah Crowell, who I think is a very underrated runner and one of the top five offensive lines in the NFL, one of the most horribly unloved Hall of Famers of all time, Joe Thomas, sitting there at left tackle for the last decade in Cleveland. So if the Browns have a plan, I'm going to be happy for the Browns, because as a Cardinals fan, I know exactly what they're dealing with, because we called it the 80s. And when I remember to what I had to deal with in the 80s and the early 90s, all I have is sympathy for the Browns. And if they can find their way out of that hole, God bless them.
Yeah, I mean, Kizer has been really impressive. I mean, granted, I don't think he's necessarily been like the most impressive quarterback of the preseason, but I mean, he's been good. I mean, and I see what you're saying in terms of the scud missile. I mean, that's sort of the thing that I notice with his balls. I mean, they're pretty much all a very high velocity. Granted, I mean, they're like on a rope most of the time, but it is, he reminds me of Kaepernick in some ways, and that just like, it's all that high velocity throwing. Granted, I think he's a little bit more accurate, but you know, time will tell as we get into, you know, a real test in the regular season. Either way, I think it's a good point to transition over to Rob's team here, because, you know, when we talk about teams that, you know, might need another quarterback here or there, you know, Rob, you guys need a quarterback who hasn't been concussed. What's going on with you?
Yeah, we need camp arms. We need something. So our starter, Tyrod Taylor, gets knocked out of the third preseason game against the Baltimore Ravens with a concussion. They play Nate Peterman, fifth round pick out of the University of Pittsburgh. And then the third stringer, TJ Yates, he ended up getting a concussion as well. So he is the only quarterback on the roster who is healthy is Nate Peterman, which is great for him. He's been getting a lot of reps. He got, you know, obviously every single rep in practice today. So good for him. You know, it's something a rookie could use. Obviously not the ideal situation for it to happen, but he'll take it. You know, he referred to it as being the only sheriff left in a ghost town. I think you will see the Bills probably, you know, sign someone, you know, for the very short term, because you still have a fourth preseason game to come up. You don't know. I don't know the severity necessarily on either of the two concussions, but my guess is Tyrod's definitely not playing. And, you know, with the unknown health of Yates, you kind of have to go and pick up somebody. Now, whether it's a Christian Ponder or is it just someone who's going to be a camp, you know, a literal camp body, you know, to kind of get you through the last game, we'll see.
I was thinking they should put Logan Thomas back behind center.
Oh, he's good at tight end. Leave him at tight end.
Well, I was always thinking that if Buffalo really did want to stick with, you know, trying to build an offense around suiting Tyrod Taylor's strengths, then obvious backup to him would be Colin Kaepernick. Now, I mean, you have obviously all the Kaepernick baggage, and everyone's just waiting to see if he's ever going to land somewhere. But also, it just seems like Buffalo's not entirely committed to Tyrod. But, I mean, I don't know. What's the conversation around the Kaepernick possibility in Buffalo?
So a couple things with this. One, LeSean McCoy had came out a couple days ago and said that he's not worth the hassle for what he'd bring to the team. So you have a team captain, vocal team leader, saying he wouldn't like it prior. Colin Kaepernick, at the end of the year, they asked him which stadium was the roughest to him, and he said that it was when he played in Buffalo. He said they were the worst fans to him by far. But also, I think that, the Bills are definitely building towards the future. I think it's obvious with some of the trades that they've made, you know, acquiring draft capital. This is going to be Tyrod Taylor's last year in Buffalo unless something, you know, pretty crazy happens and he kind of plays out of his mind, because they can cut him after this year. And the feeling, you know, around the city is that that's kind of how it's going to go down. So I agree with you. I think Kaepernick would be a good fit for, you know, some of the stuff that, you know, Tyrod does, because they're, you know, they're similar players. You know, they do things with their feet, you know, and kind of, you know, worked out of that half read system while they're reading half the field. I think the offense, you know, you could put Kaepernick in an offense that was tailored to Tyrod Taylor and he would do fine, you know, and vice versa. So I don't think that they're going to go the Kaepernick route. I think that they're going to look for someone to kind of just fill in, just because I think they do like Nate Peterman, and they kind of want to keep him the two. I have a feeling that you're going to see him starting by the end of the year, whether it's by injury or the Bills just wanting to see how he would do. And TJ Yates is a Dennison guy, Dennison being Rico Dennison, the offensive coordinator for the Bills. He was the OC in Houston, I believe, when Yates won his, you know, Yates actually won a playoff game against Cincinnati a couple years ago. So he kind of knows the system and, you know, is kind of his guy.
Rob, I have a question for you.
Yes, sir.
So I'm going to throw a possibility by you. It's a wild possibility for Buffalo, but it's one I've been thinking about for a while, and that is, you guys have always seemed like a team to me that might be devoid of a plan right now, as I was just talking about with the Browns. So what about the possibility of maybe a third or a fourth round pick from Jacksonville for Tyrod Taylor, and you guys go into full rebuild mode this year? What do you think about that?
I love it, because I think that, you know, the Bills actually, now they do have a plan. Then now that they got it, they have a new coach and a new GM. Both of them came from Carolina, McDermott and Bean. And, you know, their plan is definitely building for the future. I mean, the Bills right now, if you include the anticipated compensatory pick that they're going to get in the third round for Stephon Gilmore, they're probably going to have 8 picks in the first about 105 draft picks in the draft this year. They have 2 firsts. They have 2 seconds. If you include the compensatory, they're going to have 3 thirds, and they're going to have an early fourth. I mean, obviously, the Bills aren't going to be a good team this year. So I think, you know, the plan is to just kind of, you know, move forward and, you know, build through the draft and, you know, kind of do kind of similar to what the Browns are doing. It seems like just they're at the first stage of it. So I would love, I mean, I shouldn't say love, because it's always disappointing when your team just goes, you know, full scaled, you know, tank. And in Buffalo, the Sabres, the NHL hockey team, did that recently. A couple years ago, they did that, but now they're kind of on their way back up. So it's really fun to watch. But it just stinks, like, that year. You hate to root against your team, but you almost feel like that's what you're doing because you're just worried about the draft. So it's frustrating as a fan, but I think it's a necessary evil. The previous GM did a terrible job with cap management. How does a team that finished 8-8 every year end up in almost cap hell? Like, it makes no sense whatsoever. So they do have a plan, and I like the plan. And if Tyrod Taylor were traded to a team like Jacksonville or, you know, say Denver or something like that, I would be all for it.
Well, and speaking of difficult deals and moving forward and playing for the future, another interesting situation that the Bills have right now is Marcell Dareus, who is back in headlines this week as he was sent home from Baltimore for violating a team rule and did not travel home with the team after the game from Baltimore. And it's still fairly confusing about what exactly occurred in Baltimore. The team has been very cryptic about it. And McDermott, when he spoke to the media on Sunday, said he still hadn't spoken to Marcell Dareus for violating that team rule. But then Dareus, speaking to NewYorkUpstate.com, apparently today, I believe, according to this report I'm seeing on Pro Football Talk, said I take full responsibility once we had our conversation with Sean McDermott of how we're going to handle things. To be honest, our conversation that we had made everything crystal clear on both to both parties. So again, it's not crystal clear to us. It is crystal clear to Dareus, apparently, of what he needs to do in order to stay on this team. But he's had a lot of trouble off the field. And so, Rob, I mean, like, what is his future, and how can the Bills get either separation from him or compliance from him?
Well, I think his future is he's kind of tied, given the way the salary cap is and the way his contract is, he's kind of tied to the Bills till 2019, unless the Bills were to find someone who wanted to trade for an overpriced defensive tackle who causes problems. So I don't think that's going to happen. Like, they couldn't go and, like, release him this year. I think that if they released him this year, it'd be a $37 million cap hit. So obviously that's not happening. And even next year, it would cost them, on top of his salary price, an extra $6 million to release him. So they're not going to be able to release him till 2019, which feels like that's just where it's going to go. Like, he's going to. So it's kind of like with Mario Williams with the Bills after they signed him to that big contract. You know, he played great, you know, for a little bit, and then was just, you know, kind of brutal after that. But they couldn't really do anything because of his big contract and the money he was owed. So I feel like we're going down the same path with Dareus. you know, the rumors were that he, you know, missed the team bus to head to Baltimore. So, you know, they sent him home. So, you know, we'll see. They're both, you know, they're going to say the right things in the media, but I think eventually this just ends in 2019 with a thank you for your service, but your service is no longer needed.
That is a long time to extend an unhappy marriage. But
well, I mean, when it costs that much money, you kind of do what you got to do.
I guess a lot of people do. Anyways, I mean, moving on to another team that, you know, again, going through some of these declared starters, we talked about this a bit on Thursday, but Trevor Siemian is going to get the start over Paxton Lynch in Denver. I think that's less of a surprise to a lot of people. I mean, other than the fact that, I mean, Lynch also did not play well and also hurt his shoulder in this game this week, which probably, I guess, makes that decision easier. But, you know, I mean, I as a Chiefs fan, I'm always happy to see disarray in Denver. But I'm also of two minds, because on one hand, I kind of like Simeon's story. I mean, he was not expected to even have a shot at this job when they just picked him up. And he's, you know, against all odds, has worked his way into it. But you still, I mean, if you're Denver, you got to be thinking that you need to be making a play for a quarterback somewhere here, because Simeon's, I don't think he's a long-term answer, and you have a championship-worthy defense. So it would seem that this is something they need to move on. Meanwhile, as a Chiefs fan, I just have to say, I mean, I did watch at least the first half of the Denver preseason game this week, just because it was the debut of Jamaal Charles in, you know, blue and orange, and it was very, very strange. All of Chiefs Twitter was and social media was very, very much of two minds about it, like whether or not we should root for him to show that his career is totally done and he is washed up, or whether we should, you know, root for his return to this league. Because, look, I mean, I think it was obvious that after basically playing, I think it was 8 games over the last 2 years for the Chiefs, they couldn't afford to pay him what he was owed under his existing contract. I think it was something like $6 or $7 million this year. But at the same time, you know, they apparently also didn't attempt to renegotiate with him at all. And this was one of the many weird contracts and weird things that happened before John Dorsey was suddenly fired as GM in Kansas City. I think this is one of the things that that ownership would have liked to see the Chiefs figure out a way to keep him on the Chiefs. And so, anyways, in this game, I mean, he looked like he's about 80 to 90% of the Jamaal Charles we remember seeing, which 80 to 90% of Jamaal Charles is still very good. His knees didn't look entirely stable. And honestly, after his best run, he went off the field with an apparent injury. Apparently, he was being looked at for a concussion, which he didn't have. But either way, I mean, I still don't really know what to think about Charles. And again, I haven't heard from you in a while, Dr. Jones. I'm curious what your thoughts are on, because also, you know, Denver is an interesting fantasy team. I mean, obviously, no one's going to be, you know, drafting Trevor Siemian, but that backfield has some promise and has some confusion, has some question marks. I mean, C.J. Anderson's good if he stays healthy. And then you also have Henderson, who's an interesting third down option. Now you have Charles apparently healthy there. So, I mean, what are your thoughts on that whole situation?
Well, I think I fall in line with the theory that as NFL fans, sometimes we root for laundry. It's got to be very hard to see Jamaal Charles in a Denver uniform as a Chiefs fan. I can tell you how it was extremely hard for me to root for Emmett Smith in a Cardinals uniform, knowing that I hated the Cowboys my entire life, pretty much. So that's got to be very tough for you. As it stands for the fantasy implications in Denver, I don't think Jamaal Charles is going to get much opportunity there. As he's always been a small man playing in a big man's game, it makes him at a higher propensity to get hurt, which we've seen. C.J. Anderson is more of the type of back that they want in that offense, in the Kubiak offense. But when it comes down to it, they've got Charles, Booker, Anderson, they all can get hurt. And one of the reasons you guys let go of Charles is because of how deep your backfield was in Kansas City. So moving on is probably the best thing. It's going to hurt your heart. But I think the point that I want to make that's probably the biggest point to what you said about Siemian is, Even the best GMs, the best owners of teams, make bad decisions. You've got the Patriots dropping Coney Ealy, admitting their mistake this week. You've got John Elway up there drafting Paxton Lynch, doing all this stuff to prop him up as the next quarterback after Peyton Manning. But instead, what happens? Unknown Trevor Siemian comes in. And although he's their starting quarterback, what does that say about Paxton Lynch, the guy they drafted in the first round last year? It's kind of the same atrocity going on in Denver that you see in Jacksonville. You've got these two awesome defenses in my mind and these two ugly offenses. It's got to be very hard as a Von Miller or a Calais Campbell or a Jalen Ramsey or an Aqib Talib to keep your intensity up when you know that you probably have a better chance of scoring touchdowns than your offense does. So it's got to be very demoralizing to continue to live in that paradigm. So I just keep thinking about different ways that Denver can improve their situation. And it's exactly what Rob said earlier. You know, get someone in like Tyrod. There's a ton of teams around this league that have quarterbacks that might be languishing on benches or, you know, are going to actually help teams win games when it might be in the best interest of that organization to not win those games this year long term. I had a friend last night. He drafted CJ Procise in the sixth round, and he's a Philadelphia 76ers fan. And I told him he needs to change his team name to Trust the Procise. And it goes back to having a plan. It goes back to knowing how to win in the NFL. And sometimes you've got to take a step back to take a step forward. So Paxton Lynch is going to be a bad problem for Denver for a long time. And honestly, though, Nick, it's going to work in your favor because personally, I'm not a fan of the Raiders. I think you guys are the ones that are going to win the division this year.
Well, I appreciate that, certainly. And yeah, I mean, I don't expect Denver to take back this division this year, certainly. I have my questions about it. I am definitely biased. But yeah, we'll see. I mean, we have time. I'm going to give some thoughts about the Chiefs and their performance this week and how that pertains to our standing here. But just to take it to one other team and their situation with the quarterback is that Savage was also given the start in the for the Houston Texans over Deshaun Watson. Granted, I don't think that was a huge surprise, but among the teams where, you know, it's kind of similar to Denver in a way that there was truly a wide open, well, I guess Denver and the Browns, like where there's a really wide open quarterback competition here involving a highly drafted rookie. It's sort of interesting that Deshaun Watson didn't rise up as a guy who I think many thought, just given his college success, might have a quicker path, a starting lineup, and in a team that was certainly desperate for a quarterback, that he's not getting in there early. I mean, again, Savage is going to be the steady hand, but also Watson didn't help himself with his performance this weekend. He went 11 of 21 for 116 yards, zero touchdowns, one interception, quarterback rating of 48.9. So not great for him. I mean, he did some good things. He did a lot of rookie things. But certainly, you know, an interesting guy to continue to watch. I mean, there's no reason why he can't suit up at some point as the starter in Houston this year, especially given Savage's injury history. But I know that that he was a guy that you really liked coming out of the draft, Dr. Jones. So I'm going to get Rob back into this too. And I realize I haven't gone to him in a little bit, but I'm just curious about your thoughts on how Watson has progressed so far, Jones.
Well, before I even begin there, I think I share the entire world's thoughts, and on behalf of the Next Fan Up podcast, all of our thoughts and prayers go out to the Houston area with what they're dealing with this weekend. But as I turn the comments back towards football, the first thing I would say about Deshaun Watson is we've seen the Tom Savage story before. I don't understand why you would make him your starting quarterback when you need to get your rookie first-round draft pick reps when the bullets start flying. I've always told all of the friends that I have that are football fans, it's very important that these young quarterbacks get reps so that the game can start slowing down for them. And the longer they sit on the sidelines, I think it stunts that growth in many ways. It's not like Tom Savage is Brett Favre and Deshaun Watson is Aaron Rodgers. Tom Savage is Tom Savage, and I think we've all seen the Tom Savage story play out before. So getting Watson on the field, getting his rapport with DeAndre Hopkins and all of the other offensive weapons they have there in Houston, to me, makes more sense. I was a fan of Deshaun Watson coming in the draft, and I think the thing I can say is this kid's a winner. We know that he understands how to move an offense down the field, but he's not going to get better unless you give him NFL reps in an NFL offense. He's not going to get better holding the clipboard on the sideline. So when I look at things like Houston, it's very frustrating to me because he has the talent versus like a Paxton Lynch, who was always this raw kid with these physical traits, but never actually was a great quarterback in college. This is a guy that just beat Alabama in the national championship game, and he's going up against Tom Savage, and he looked good in the preseason. You don't keep that kid on the bench. This is just another, I think, blunderous decision by Bill O'Brien and his coaching staff, just like when they hired Brock, or they signed Brock Osweiler last year. They keep making wrong decisions, and I think ultimately it's going to lead to Bill O'Brien being one of the first coaches fired this season.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, the Texans are such an interesting team to me just because I feel like as a Chiefs fan, I look at them and I kind of see myself in the mirror, that they are going through the exact same thing that the Chiefs had for a long time, which is like an honestly, you know, definitely a top level defense that if everything else was right, I mean, is always going to be, you know, top 10, top five-ish, and just nothing at the QB and just like trying to do whatever they can to get one. And stumble, and the defense still keeps them sort of competitive, but just no answers there. Luckily, the Chiefs have sort of figured that out, at least for now. I mean, we'll get to more of that here in a bit. But the only other thing I wanted to get to in terms of just a headline before we talk about our own teams a little bit more is that John Harbaugh, the head coach of the Baltimore Ravens, has now promised that Joe Flacco will be back and starting for week one of the regular season. As everyone remembers, while we've talked about a lot of different injuries this week, the Ravens were the team that seemed to get the biggest rash of injuries at the very beginning of training camp season. And Joe Flacco's continued back problems were one of the things that I think everyone was most worried about, that if he was not, if he was not going to be coming back into the saddle so fast, and if he was going to continue to be struggling with something for the rest of the year, that was really a difficult sign for the Ravens. But their defense has looked extremely good this preseason, and so I wanted to toss it to you, Rob, because you are the one that have watched them the most recently. I mean, I've been impressed by the Ravens' defense so far and overall what they have there, but you saw them against your own team just now. So, I mean, what are your thoughts? I mean, if Flacco comes back, is this a team that can, at least, be in the wild card race and contend?
I think that Baltimore has a couple things going for them. Quarterback position notwithstanding, their defense has looked fantastic in the preseason, and they have they're a pretty loaded defense, in general. They have two fantastic safeties. They have, their defensive line is great. I think that their defense, kind of typical to previous Ravens teams, their defense could carry them, I think, to, at least a 500 record. That being said, when you look at the quarterback play, it's preseason. It is what it is. But they really need to get Flacco back because their offense has looked dreadful. Mallett has looked terrible. He has definitely not looked the part of a number two, to the point where Ravens fans have been clamoring for a guy who was an undrafted free agent to become their number two quarterback behind Flacco, which kind of says, how they feel. They have weapons. It's not like they don't have weapons. I think that Wallace still has talent. Jeremy Maclin, who obviously you're quite familiar with, I think he's a talented wide receiver. Running back, they don't have the best running backs in the world right now. Their number one running back is out for the year. But they brought in Woodhead. Granted, he's coming off an injury, and I believe he's 31 years old. But he's a nice, you know, catching the ball out of the backfield type. Terrence West, you know, played reasonably well last year. You can expect probably a similar year. I think that the Ravens, they could contend for a wild card. I think they come just short. I think their defense carries them. I think Flacco, you know, he gets paid like a high-end quarterback. I don't think he's necessarily a high-end type quarterback. So, you know, the offense is going to improve once he gets back in the saddle. But I think they're a type of team that finishes just outside that wild card standings at the end of the year.
All right. Well, that's all the news. But, you know, we're all football fans. We all want to bring our fan perspective on this. And we also like to reward our super fans that join onto the show. And so, you know, I just kind of want to go around the horn and just and talk a bit about our teams, what they've shown in the preseason, and how that affects what you're expecting out of them once the regular season starts. And I'm going to toss it to you first, Dr. Jones. You seem to be pretty happy with what they showed in Atlanta this week.
Yeah, that the performance was their best of the preseason so far. Now, we are one of the few teams in the NFL right now that have had four preseason games. We actually have five in the preseason, which, again, nuts. But so this served as our main dress rehearsal for the regular season. And I think we came out and we showed everything we needed to show. I think one of the biggest question marks we had coming into this game was the health of John Brown, our number two wide receiver, someone that we rely on to take the top off the defense. What does he do in this game? Two touchdowns on two of the most spectacular catches you will see in the preseason. And this was his first game action of the year. I would urge everybody to go check out those highlights because it was something else. As it pertains to our offensive line, Atlanta has, you know, Vic Beasley. They just drafted Tack McKinley. We gave Carson Palmer all the protection we need, and everybody in the world knows that we need to protect Carson Palmer, because if it isn't for that, if he goes down with an injury, it's going to be worse than the Ravens losing Flacco. I'll tell you that right now. So I was very happy to see that. March down the field a couple times. One area of concern for me still is our backup running back position. Chris Johnson actually had two fumbles in the first quarter of yesterday's game. One we recovered, one that we lost, and that was a red zone fumble that we lost, so that hurt. But our offensive line, our wide receivers are coming together. Obviously, we have, in my opinion, the best running back in the NFL in our backfield. As we turn to the defensive side of the ball, we lost Calais Campbell. We lost some secondary players, which I'll touch on for a second, but Robert Kimdiche has absolutely turned into a completely different player in his second year. One guy that I'm comparing him to is Chris Jones on your defensive line, Nick. I think he's going to be something special. Arians has been calling him disruptive the entire preseason and training camp. And I'm telling you now, every game that he's played, he has been disruptive just in every backfield, tackles for loss. Just completely blowing plays up before they get started. He did have a slight calf strain earlier this week, so he missed the Atlanta game, but that's only expected to keep him out 7, maybe 10 days. Arians is calling it something minor. Another really nice development is our second cornerback position, Justin Bethel. After a year with a lingering foot injury that he had surgery on last season, is finally healthy and he's looking confident. He had a great game yesterday, and he's just building solid performance after solid performance. And the thing that makes me the happiest, the thing that's bringing me the most joy on defense right now, Tyrann Mathieu is back. This is the second straight game he's had an interception. He is moving around like the honey badger again. And I don't know how long he's going to stay healthy. I keep saying that health is a skill. And right now it does not seem to be a skill that Tyrann Mathieu has mastered yet. But as long as he stays healthy, we are going to be a very formidable defense. Deion Buchanan is already off the PUP list. He had an ankle surgery in the offseason. He's going to be ready for week one, it looks like. Hassan Reddick, looking great in the middle linebacker position, still making some boneheaded plays, overrunning when there's play action, different misdirection type plays. Same goes for Buda Baker, our other rookie. But these are things that happen when you're on the field. You learn from taking those on-field reps, and they're learning quickly. So really happy about what I'm seeing from the Cardinals. And as I said at the beginning of the podcast, when we were reviewing what we think is going to happen this year, I think the range of outcomes for the Cardinals, if Carson Palmer stays healthy, is anywhere from 9-7 to basically 11-5. Carson Palmer gets hurt, we're probably a 5-7 win team. So that's the big thing for us, is going to be protecting the franchise, Carson Palmer. And hopefully it's going to end in a playoff run. I don't think we're a Super Bowl contender, not unless a lot of things fall perfectly into place. But I can easily see this team being a division winner or a wild card winner, and then having a win or two in the playoffs before we ultimately maybe turn the corner and go back home. But I've been pretty happy with the preseason. And the most important thing, ultimately, we've been pretty healthy the entire month of August. And that makes me very happy. So I'm pretty optimistic about the season. So we can only go down from here, boys.
Well, that's always how it goes. But speaking of health, and I'm just curious, I mean, how many, for the average Cardinals fan and for you, I mean, how many more years is Carson Palmer expected to play? I mean, is it time for the Cardinals to start looking for the solution there? Or do you think he's going to be, you know, 2 to 3 more?
I absolutely think it's time to start looking for the solution. I mean, one of the most underrated things about Carson Palmer right now, he's going to be turning 40 in a year, I think. So he's making $23 million this year. So not only is he one of the highest paid players in all of football this year, but he's one of the most brittle. And I think there's a cost versus benefit ratio that Steve Keim has to weigh every year. Larry Fitzgerald and Carson Palmer weigh down a ton of our cap. So does Mike Iupati. And we're weighing those things. I think Carson Palmer has, at best, 2 good years left in him, this year and next year. Highly competitive player. I don't think he wants to retire. I think Larry's sticking around because he knows we have an opportunity to still win a title. I think if we were in the situation where we were throwing Derek Anderson or Ryan Lindley out as our starting quarterback like we did a few years back, I think Larry Fitzgerald would be retired already. So to answer your question, 2 years, but that's a big if on those 2 years, because Carson seems to get hurt every other year. And last year was, even though he missed a couple games, was relatively healthy. And when I say hurt every other year, that's an ACL or a knee injury or something that takes him out for half the season. So my fingers are crossed that we can protect this guy, because it's ultimately the most important thing we need to do this year to be successful.
All right, and I'll toss it over to you, Rob, again. You know, we talked a lot about your team already, but really more about some of the negatives and some of the problems. I mean, how has this preseason fared for Bills fans in general? I mean, have there been some bright spots? And I guess what are Bills fans most excited about right now?
I mean, if you're going by just the preseason games, it's not, they haven't been impressive. The offense has looked, you know, pretty much in shambles, like bottom five offense for sure. The one good thing is they finally switched out of that Rex Ryan 3-4 that he was running, and they're back to a 4-3, kind of that cover 2, cover 3 shell defense that you see a couple teams running. The defense is going to be improved for sure this year. The offense will not be. The offense has actually been like sneaky good the 2 prior years. But I think that they're going to have a little bit of problems. I'm not exactly sure how well Tyrod is going to fit into this offense, which is going to be a big issue. All the receivers are kind of, for the most part, slot guys in some form or another, which is going to make this, you know, a little difficult. He doesn't have, obviously, the Bills traded Sammy Watkins. He was kind of the guy that took the top off. And Tyrod's, you know, best skill over the past 2 years was throwing the deep ball. He's one of the best in the league at throwing the deep pass. And now they've kind of taken that away from him to a certain degree. You know, Jordan Matthews is going to be a starter, obviously. He's a slot guy. Zay Jones, the rookie second-round pick out of Eastern Carolina. They're playing him on the outside. But in college, I mean, he was a slot guy, I believe, 75% of the time. So, you know, that's, you know, he's not a burner by any stretch. He's a bigger receiver. He's not a burner. And then the other receiver who's going to play a lot is a former Oakland Raider, Andre Holmes. He's definitely not, you know, a speed merchant guy by any stretch. So I think that, you know, they're going to have, since they don't have anyone to scare defenses vertically, it's going to bring in defenses, you know, to run 8-9 in the box against LeSean McCoy, who's the Bills' really only legitimate game breaker on offense. So I think it might be a long year for Buffalo. But that being said, I love what they're doing as far as the future. They've decided to not, you know, just try a lot of the Bills haven't made the playoffs in a while. It's been 17 years. So you'll see a lot of when someone new comes to town, the first thing they do is try to, you know, kill that streak. And they, you know, someone did the Bills sign a couple guys, but all it does is just lead to 8-8 seasons. You know, the past, I think, 3 or 4 years, the Bills have been, you know, 8-8, 9-7, 7-9, things like that. You know, they're kind of going to totally rebuild the team. We talked about this earlier, but the Bills have 2 first-round picks. The Bills have 2 second-round picks, both of which I imagine will be early because one of them is the LA Rams. So I think it's feasible that the Bills will have, you know, 4 of the first 38 to 40 draft picks. You know, they have a couple they're guaranteed 2 third-round picks, might get another 3rd or a 3rd and a 4th with the compensatory picks. And I just feel like now there's a coach and a GM who are kind of in lockstep with each other. And, you know, McDermott's first draft class, you know, it's preseason, so he can only gauge it so well. But, you know, it looks like it's the start of a pretty good one. Zay Jones, who is their second round guy, has been playing well. He's definitely the best receiver on the Bills right now, or at least he has been in preseason. We'll see what Jordan Matthews brings to the team. Tre'Davious White has been the unquestioned number one cornerback the entire training camp. It feels like he's going to be, you know, a hit. He's played well. They traded up to get Deion Dawkins, who was a very late second-round pick out of Temple. And he has played well also. He started off a little up and down, but he's been playing well. He actually moved him to left tackle this week to cover for the loss of Cordy Glenn. So if we can plus they took Nate Peterman with one of the last picks in the 5th round. And if nothing else, he's proven to at least be a very serviceable backup quarterback. I don't think he's going to be the future quarterback of the Bills, but, you know, it's nice to have a cheap backup quarterback who's not bad, who can come in a pinch when you have a team, you know, and have that for the cheap. So it's optimistic that if this year's draft goes as well as last year's, with just a lot more ammo, maybe the future is finally bright in Buffalo, which honestly, it really hasn't been in years.
Well, that is good to hear because, you know, ever since the Chiefs broke their really depressing long record, I think it was 21 years we got to without a playoff victory. I do think the most depressing playoff stat, a record or whatever, still being held is the Buffalo Bills with their 17-year drought for playoffs. But yeah, I mean, and just speaking of the Chiefs, I mean, you know, we've been running a little bit long, but I do just want to toss out there because I am generally a very positive Chiefs fan on this podcast. Granted, part of that is you got to rep the team, but I will, for any Chiefs fans out there, I'm gonna level with you and whinge with you a little bit. And that, you know, in addition to losing Spencer Ware in this game against the Seahawks last week, I mean, it was an overall disappointing performance by the Chiefs. I mean, granted, all the rest of the preseason had been almost unequivocally good. The starting units looked sharp, and, you know, obviously, you know, Mahomes looked pretty good. I mean, he's done it about as well as any other rookie quarterbacks this preseason. There's been a lot of hype on him. There's been a lot of silly talk about trading Alex Smith and starting him, and that's just not going to happen. So don't even think about it. And it's good that it's not going to happen. That said, Alex Smith had the sort of game against the Seattle starters that really really sort of gut checks, I think, a lot of Chiefs fans going into the season. Because, look, I mean, he looked good, and the narrative had been all through camp that, look, this Mahomes kid is really pushing Alex to do what he needs to do. Because, you know, I mean, Alex Smith can execute an offense really well. He's a smart enough guy. He's going to take the easy throws, and he's going to generally put them in the right place, and he's not going to make the dumb mistakes. But, you know, when in training camp and when every single drill, whether it is, you know, just the quarterback drills or the, you know, the overall 11-on-11, if you have the guy behind you, like, dropping dimes on deep passes and things like that, you're going to up your game. You're going to try to compete. And he had been doing that. I mean, he'd been hitting some nice deep routes in the previous two preseason games. This week, however, I mean, it was this total dink and dunk land. And I mean, and it was just, it was, I mean, it'd be one thing to look, I mean, you can call it preseason, but it was just exactly the first half of the game against the Seahawks. It wasn't just preseason. It was exactly like a half of Chiefs football that we have seen in the regular season many times by Alex Smith, where it comes out on the stat sheet okay. I think we went into the halftime, you know, 13-16 or something like that. But the reality, what that was their initial scripted opening drive, you know, resulted in a field goal, and it was a 14-play opening drive. So it was a lot of dink and dunking. And they kick a field goal, and then it was just absolutely nothing offensively until the 2-minute drill at the end. The one touchdown came on a kickoff return by DeAnthony Thomas, who, by the way, I mean, he definitely guaranteed his roster spot in this game. He's sort of the handcuff for all the things they want to do with Tyreek. He also just looks just generally like he's finally turned into a bit the player they've been trying to kind of hoping for. And maybe it was just because, you know, with Tyreek bursting on the scene, he created a much stronger bit of the playbook that can really utilize those quick in space guys. But DeAnthony Thomas is now, you know, he's got a roster spot when a lot of people thought he was going to be off the team last year. But just overall, I mean, it was not a good performance by the Chiefs offense. And it was just so emblematic of what this team is. It is a team that is extremely well coached, that has enough pieces in place that they're going to win most regular season games because they have a good defense, they have a good coach, and they have a quarterback who's just not going to make mistakes. He's not going to do anything great, but he's going to sort of shepherd them to a regular season win most of the time. But when they actually play a very good team, it's just, they just hit an absolute wall. And so they get your hopes up, and then they crash them right back down. The other thing that I found strange, and you know, for me, I talked about this on Thursday. I was really hoping to see Patrick Mahomes get some chances with the ones against the Seattle ones. What was weird is that what happened was the Chiefs actually put Mahomes and the entire second team in the second quarter against the Seattle starting defense. And while the Chiefs' starting offensive line, it looked encouragingly good throughout preseason, and it's basically returning everybody that they had last year, and so there's some good continuity there. Their reserve linemen, outside of like one good swing guard, are really bad. I mean, I don't think any of these guys are going to be on an NFL team in a few weeks. And so, you know, so you're taking literally Patrick Mahomes and a bunch of non-NFL linemen against the Seattle defense. And he did not look great, but I mean, I felt like, you know, it was sort of setting Mahomes up to fail, which is a Chiefs fan, which obviously for the preseason, what we really want to see is we just want to see the promising young kid. And we weren't really given a shot at seeing that in, I think, a proper, like, scientific setting. Granted, from the Chiefs perspective, I think they just don't care. They don't, they view Alex Smith as absolutely 100% the starter this year. And so for Mahomes, it's like, all right, they're going to give him those shots next preseason. This year, they're just trying to slowly install the playbook with him and taking him along slowly, and that's fine. But I did want to vent some frustration with that, in addition to my rant about the penalties earlier. Either way, we've gone long, but I feel like, you know, we've had a great conversation here about where things are with a number of teams around the league this year. And going into the fourth preseason game, we're definitely still going to have a Thursday show. Check that out. Pod Vader is going to be back in the saddle. We're going to be looking at all sorts of exciting things. There's going to be some surprise cuts coming up, and there's going to be a lot of talk you know, coming up for the regular season. Just a reminder, next Thursday is just 1 week from the all-important, you know, opening game of the regular season, and that is between my team and Pod Vader's team. Granted, Pat, our Patriot superfan, is the official guy, but I find myself pretty much at war with both him and the other host of the show. Either way, tune in on Thursday. Definitely check us out there. I mean, you can find us on blogtalkradio.com/nextfanup, but it's even better if you look us up on iTunes. You can find us there. And while you're there, go ahead and rate and review us. It's a great way for other people to find the show. And we always love to hear your feedback. In fact, basically, if you write anything positive or negative, we're pretty likely to read it on the air. We also do contests every now and then. You know, you could listen in, and you might be able to get yourself a gift card or something like that out of it. And also, in addition to all of the stuff we do in the audio format, we do have a website of our own. It is nextfanup.wordpress.com. There we put previews from all of our super fans about the upcoming games. We've done that through the preseason, and we're going to do it definitely through the regular season. So if you want to hear what your fan representative is saying about your team, it's definitely a place to look. And honestly, I use those a lot as sort of opposition research. You know, I love to look at the other teams in the Chiefs and get a little bit of thoughts from the opposing fan. Like, what, you know, what are they worried about? You know, maybe who are we going to be targeting? There's some great resources there. And again, always feel free to email us at nextfanup@gmail.com. And we also like to be approachable, just even in individual. And look, I mean, what, you know, Twitter in this day and age, at all levels of our government society, is a place for communication. And Rob, I know that you are active on Twitter. And so if people want to talk some jive, or, you know, perhaps commiserate or perhaps celebrate with you about the Buffalo Bills, how can they best get in touch with you?
You could find me on Twitter at @Buffalo_Sauced.
Good stuff. And Dr. Jones, are you also on the Twitters?
I am, and I'm pretty active. You can find me @Jones_symbol, so the underscore line, mobile, @Jones_mobile.
Good stuff. Well, for Dr. Jones, for Rob, and for me, Nick, the Chiefs fan, there you have it, and here is Landry Jones.
Next week will be next week. Today I'm going to enjoy it. I'm going to go back home and hang out.